Thank you for listening to the Keystone Church podcast. For more information about us, you can visit us at mykeystonechurch.com.
How does everybody feel about long pauses? You ever notice that silence is something that is very difficult for a lot of us in America? We want to fill it with something. So I'm sure you can't guess what I'm talking about today. You got it. So we're in this series on 12 keys to encountering God's presence, and we're down to the last two. And so today I wanted to talk a little bit about silence.
Or not talk about it.
Or not talk about it, right? Wouldn't that be a lot less? It would be a lot more appropriate, right? To make us practice it. What do you guys think? Can we sit in silence without awkwardness for 25 minutes?
Everyone sit in silence and think about what David might be saying.
I am sure some of you guys could come up with something a lot more entertaining than there you go, a little background static. Well, I want to start, guys. It's funny, if you know me, you know I'm kind of a big picture thinker. I try not to scare people with it too much, but I'm the kind of guy that whenever I write like an essay, I always want to be like, since the dawn of creation. Like, I always want to go back to the very beginning, and like, it's kind of annoying, I'm sure, but it's like, I'm like, well, it all starts here, and then it, and I can grow it from there. So that's what I'm doing today. Genesis 1, verses 2 and 3, it says, the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. So we've got this amazing picture, and it's interesting because it says the earth was without form, so there was no form to it, and it was void. And then it says darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. So, I mean, that begs the question of, like, what actually was there? You know, we have this kind of picture. I have this picture of, like, just an ocean in pitch black darkness. And I don't know if that's accurate, but that's kind of the picture you have. And yet it says it was without form. Well, and obviously an ocean has form. So it's a really interesting picture that's being painted here. What we see, though, is essentially there was nothing. There was silence. And God filled it. He spoke and he filled that silence with his word. He fills things. That's what he does. God filled the earth with literally with life. He fills our hearts with himself. And his first act of creation was to speak into the empty abyss of chaos and create something beautiful. So I don't know how many of you guys have heard the analogy, but have you heard the analogy when you're trying to hear God's voice, if you think of water and you think of like a rushing river and you put a drop, you let a drop fall into that river, nobody's going to notice that. You know, there's no obvious sign that anything took place because there's just too much activity going on. However, if you take a completely still source of water, just a still lake with absolutely no wind, nothing going on, and you put a drop into that, you're going to see the ripples. You're going to actually be able to see that something happened. In the same way, I think that's kind of what we're seeing God doing in creation, and it's kind of what I believe he wants to do inside of our own hearts. If we think of our hearts as a place that can be either chaotic and messy and loud, or that can be still and peaceful and quiet, ready to receive his voice and actually recognize it. I'm going to spend almost most of today in Mark chapter 1, because there's a whole description of what Jesus does in the very first chapter of Mark that I think speaks a lot. It speaks volumes about silence. Mark 1, chapter 1, verse 12. Jesus had just been baptized. And he comes up out of the water, and it says, the voice of God breaks open the heavens. God can't contain himself. He physically speaks in a way that everybody around can hear and goes, this is my son, whom I love. And immediately after that, it says, the Spirit immediately drove him out into the wilderness, and he was in the wilderness 40 days being tempted by Satan, and he was with the wild animals, and the angels were ministering to him. He was driven out into the wilderness to be tempted by Satan and surrounded by wild animals. That doesn't sound like a good time. And yet we know that God is operating out of his love. He had so much affection for Jesus. He just had to interrupt the normal, natural course of human history by supernaturally invading with his voice to tell people how much he loved Jesus. So we know that Jesus being driven into the wilderness is not because, it's not a punishment, it's not a bad thing. There's actually life in it. But it says he was driven into the wilderness, and there's a lot of places, there's a lot of references in this chapter to desolate places. And that's the same word that's used here, desolate. It's a pretty intense word because it kind of brings up images of just this vast, empty, abandoned wasteland where, you know, it makes you think of people who have been left desolate. They've lost everything, and they've been left to wander in isolation. Desolate feels very lonely and scary. And for Jesus, but like many things, God doesn't view that the same way we do. And Jesus, he finds himself in the wilderness as a literal desert. And so God had tasked man to be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth, right? And to steward creation. And so God sends Jesus into an area where that hasn't happened yet. It's not been stewarded, not just in the fact that the land itself wasn't cultivated, but also in the spiritual sense that the enemy, that the devil, has free reign to be unopposed in that space. And so when Jesus goes out, he meets the devil in that place of the wilderness. In Monument, when we used to live there, gosh, how long ago was that?
9 years
ago. Do you remember hearing the coyotes over there? Oh no, were you ever there late at night?
Well, yes, I did live in Monument.
Yeah, that's right.
But there was that one time. But
I know, this is my bad memory. Thank you.
But that was before, like, all of the Split Creek area.
That's right. They did more development.
Like, when you guys first built the house.
When we first got there, I mean, we'd hear them almost every night. It was, and you just heard this pack of coyotes howling, and it just felt like that's the scary wild, that's the desolate places. But I think with us as human beings, the desolate places aren't so much somewhere out there. I think they're a whole lot more what's in here. The places where we have this wilderness, where we have desolation, this space that feels empty and scary and wild and untamed, it's the place of our mind. It's the place of your spirit. It's the place where you have to be alone with yourself. And that's a very difficult thing for us as human beings that a lot of times we don't know how to handle. I'm going to show a quick clip of what that can look like for some people.
You spend a lot of time alone in the wilderness, you better like yourself.
This is a whole new level of survival, and we're trying to film it.
I commend anyone who can survive in this area.
There's a bear right across.
Hello, Mr. Camera.
Whoa.
Not a fan of moving around camera gear.
It's really easy to just become your own worst enemy.
The solitude is driving me insane. I don't have a camera crew to talk to, and I don't have any interaction whatsoever except for me.
It's so loud up there.
Pretty sure I just saw a cougar about 10 feet from my front door.
I'm sitting in here. I was just charged by a bear. Could be into the woods circling behind me. I don't know.
The last man standing wins $500,000.
But it's not worth dying over.
What was that?
How many of you guys ever seen that show? It's epic. And we, for our small group, gosh, it was 3 years ago? I think it was about 3 years ago. What we did for the guys group was we watched that season of the show. And you're watching these men out in the wilderness, completely alone. Every recording that you're seeing, they're doing of themselves. So they're given, I think they're given at least two cameras. And they set them up and they're talking to these cameras and doing kind of confessional style, like, this is what I'm feeling, this is what I'm going through. And it's so interesting to watch because they're facing, on one hand, they're facing the wild and they're trying to survive. They're trying to build shelter and find food and water and trying to actually create a place that's habitable so they can be the last man standing. On the other hand, they're facing themselves. And I would say at way more than half of the people that dropped out did not drop out because they couldn't find survival. They dropped out because they couldn't handle being alone with themselves. They couldn't handle having nothing but their own thoughts, their own ideas, their own wilderness of wild animals and temptation filling them. And so it's really interesting to see what happens for us as humans, that we fear silence so much. We fear being in that place where there's no distraction, there's nothing to keep us from actually facing what's going on internally. The place of quiet and solitude, it's most often the place where our hidden fears and doubts start to surround us. And there's an interesting parallel in Song of Songs. Someday I'm gonna really dig into this book with you guys because I love Song of Songs and I love the analogies found in it. But in Song of Songs, the heart, you know, the place of intimacy, the place of deep personal communion is described as a vineyard or a garden. And in chapter 1, verse 6 in Song of Songs, the beloved, who is kind of represented as us, as the bride, she says, "I haven't tended my own vineyard." And I think that's the picture that a lot of us have, is we haven't tended our own vineyard. We haven't tended our inner lives, our thoughts, that place of intimacy, the place where we would commune with God instead of being a still pond, is a raging river. And it's and the thing is, we fill it not just with distraction, but we fill it with all kinds of different things, all kinds of outside thoughts. You know, the interesting thing is, if you haven't tended your heart and your mind, and you're filling your life with distraction, a lot of times we're not actually filling those spaces with our own pain and our own fears, but we actually begin to fill those places with the input and the thoughts and the pain and the fears of other people, of outside sources. So, I mean, I would say if you're at a place where you're afraid to be alone with yourself, or you find yourself filling every spare moment with some form of input, this is probably an area that God's trying to put his finger on today. It's funny because, you know, ultimately when we're filling all these places, we're doing the most childish thing you could do, you know. It's when God wants to speak to you and your own self is saying like, "Hey, I need some attention. I need you to focus and work on some things in here." And you're going, "La, la, 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 I can't hear you. You're breaking up. We're going through a tunnel." Yeah. You know, you can't actually face it. And so we just find every way we can of ignoring it. But in the process of doing that, we actually begin adding more and more things to deal with when we finally do face that place of wilderness. I love Star Wars, so you're getting the geeks out of me today. But you've got this great scene where Luke knows he's got to enter this space, and Yoda knows this isn't a battle, this is a test. And it's so interesting that Yoda said, you know, he asks Yoda what's in there, and Yoda goes, "Only what you take with you." And the next thing he does is he straps on his weapons. And Yoda's like, "Maybe I didn't make myself clear. What's in there is only what you take with you. So why don't you leave the weapons behind?" And Luke just looks at him. He's like, "Yeah, that's not happening." And it's interesting that, again, when we go into the internal place, the place of our mind or our heart, a lot of times we want to bring other things with us. I want to bring, you know, a podcast with me or an audiobook, or I want to bring, you know, a game on my phone, or I want to bring somebody else's input, because the worst thing that I could possibly imagine doing is going vulnerable and unarmed into the place of my own thoughts, into the place of silence. Last little piece about this first verse we looked at in Mark is that, notice the language in the verse, Jesus was driven. He didn't just go on a casual stroll like, "Hey, I'm just gonna go out into the wilderness." It actually says the Spirit drove him into the wilderness. The word "drove" used, the Greek there is ekbala. It means literally like to spit forth or to like expel. So he was like shot out into the wilderness. And it's so interesting that terminology was used, because this isn't something that Jesus is like looking forward to, like, "Hey, this sounds great." But the Spirit says, "Go, you need to get out there." And so he listens. Jesus' greatest mission and passion was revealing the heart of the Father. He wanted to create a way for us to identify and connect with God. So later on in Jesus' life, we hear the story of him clearing out the temple. We've got the temple, the place where people are supposed to meet with God, and it's filled with all kinds of distraction and noise, and he clears it out. He clears out the money changers and the people yelling and trying to get attention, and he's like, that's not what this place is. And he clears out the temple with a whip. But before he cleared the temple, he cleared the wilderness. And Jesus went out into the wilderness, and it was filled, again, the first time he was driven out, and it's filled with wild animals and with the enemy. But the next time Jesus goes into the desolate places, he goes by choice, and it's for a completely different purpose. The whole thing feels differently. Mark, again, this is still in the same chapter, Mark 1, verse 35. It says, and rising very early in the morning while it was still dark, he departed and went out to a desolate place, and there he prayed. So now, the desolate place, the place of the wilderness, it's been cleared out. He faced the enemy, he faced the wild animals, he faced this desert, and he cleared it out, and now he goes, and now it's a place of intimacy. Again, if we think of our hearts like a garden in Song of Songs, you know, in chapter 4, verse 12 of Song of Songs, it says, you're a garden locked up, my sister, my bride. You're a spring enclosed, a sealed fountain. So he says, you're a garden. And if our hearts are a garden, you know, and we tend it, all of a sudden it goes from a place of like, every time I go there, I feel like I just am overwhelmed by the amount of work that needs to be done, until it's transformed into a place where this is a paradise. This is a place I want to spend time. This is a place where I meet with the most intimate connections in my life. Another interesting piece of Song of Songs is there's a section of it where the beloved, again, who is represented by us, and the lover, who is Jesus, she loses track of him. He comes and knocks on the door, and then she doesn't answer, and so he leaves. And then all of a sudden she's like, wait, but I want to be with you. So she chases after him. She's trying to figure out where he is, and she's looking all around the city. She says, the night watchman beat me, which kind of represents the religious system, the religious leaders. And then she finds these people, and they're like, who are you looking for, and why is he so great? And she goes on this long description of why her lover is better than anyone else, and just how beautiful he is, how wonderful he is. And then they go, that sounds amazing. Where is he? And instead of her saying, well, I don't know, I'm looking for him, something clicks in that moment, and she realizes where he is, and she says, he's in his garden. And what's so cool about this section of Song of Songs is she goes from feeling this desperation of seeking him and not knowing where he is, to all of a sudden realizing he's in his garden, to realizing that he never left, to realizing that he is always with her and that he is waiting for her to meet with him in the place of intimacy. We've got to get to a point where the wilderness of our minds, of our hearts, of the place of intimacy inside of us gets cleared out, and it's not such a scary place to go, but it's actually a place that we want to spend time, when we realize that God isn't out there somewhere and we've got to chase him down and seek him and find him, but he's waiting to connect with us in that place of intimacy right now. Last section in Mark, chapter 1, verse 45, it says, Jesus went out and began to talk freely and to spread the news. Oh, he went out and began to talk freely about it and to spread the news, so that Jesus could no longer openly enter a town. Jesus could no longer openly enter a town, but he was out in desolate places, and people were coming to him from every quarter. So it's interesting, you've got this transformation of the desolate places. First, it's the place of the wild beasts and the devil. Then it's the place where he has private communion with God. Then it becomes a place, again, if we think of God as God, God is the filler of things, right? He's the creator of things. He filled the earth and he turned it into a gorgeous garden. And he said, our responsibility is to make earth look like heaven. It's to take the garden and make the whole earth look like that. And so if that's what we're called to do, that's really what you see Jesus doing here, is he goes from this place of barrenness to he clears it out of the junk, to he fills it. He's had his personal time with God there. He's filled himself with the presence of God and the Word of God. now there's too much for him to just have on his own. It's got to be shared with other people. And he invites everyone else to meet him in these desolate places. And so all of a sudden, the places of desolation are being filled with the message of the kingdom. It's been transformed. And that is what we are called to do. The place of private intimacy eventually needs to be converted into a place of public declaration. I feel like the voice of God for all of us is crying, come to me, come to the wilderness, come and be still and know that I am God. Come away by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Jesus said those exact words to the disciples because he was able to help them understand the place where you're going to get filled, the place where you're actually going to get rest, where the place of restoration for your body, for your spirit, for your soul, it's not going to be found in all the distractions that you throw into your life. You actually have to get into the wilderness if you want restoration. And that's so interesting because our tendency, again, is we want to look for the oasis, right? We want to look, where's the water? Where's the food? We want all the life. And what Jesus is saying, no, you need to go to the wilderness. When we go to the place where we have lack, God can fill it. When we go to the place that fills an immediate need, like whether it's food, whether it's the distraction of my phone or an audio, like I said, all the different things that we can just kind of use to get restoration. And yet Jesus is saying, you won't get restored until you find me in the wilderness. And the interesting thing is there's kind of two ways to approach the wilderness. On one hand, it's not just sitting in the wilderness and doing something. It's active silence. It's active silence. In some ways, we have to step into the connection with God. Like Jesus, none of the times that he went out there was he just laying on the ground going, I don't know what to do. What next, God? Like he's pursuing God, right? And he confronted what was in there with the word of God, right? Then he filled that space with intimacy with God. He was pursuing. There was active silence going on. At the same time, there's a flip side of that coin. Sometimes there's nothing more beautiful than falling asleep in the presence of God. It is absolutely okay when you enter into that place of rest and communion to not always be doing. Again, sometimes doing can be the distraction. You've got to let the Spirit of God lead you into, are you being too passive or are you being too active? I can't tell you that. Nobody else can tell you that. The Spirit of God has to lead you where he wants to meet you, because he wants to meet us in both of those places. So to close this all out, God is looking for a landing zone in your heart where the drops of his word and his presence can be experienced. So we've got to take the time. He's calling us to the wilderness. We've got to learn how to grow comfortable with silence so that he can fill it with his presence. The point is not silence itself. It's just the vehicle that we can use to discern his presence. You won't truly get to encounter the presence of God if there's so much noise going on that even if he was there, you wouldn't feel it. And there's something incredible when we realize that he's not so far out there, that he's in the garden right now waiting for us. And all we need to do is let him help us clear some things out and then just go be. So I want to encourage you, this is one of the most difficult pieces of encountering God's presence, because none of us likes to do it. And we can all, every single person can come up with 100 completely valid, legitimate, true real life reasons why we can't do that. But at some point in time, we have to decide what is our priority. Because if I want to make the world look like heaven, which I do, I've got to let him do it in here first. Which means at some point in time, you have to let good things go to let best things take place. So I want to encourage all of us And again, this is convicting to me too. This is helping me draw out and pull out areas where I've allowed other things to be my restoration. And the truth is, I never actually get restored from them. This is convicting to me in the sense of, where is it that I have not been going out into the wilderness? Even as we worship, what's interesting, and I hope all of us can get to this place where you experience that. I'm sure a lot of you have, but for worship, when I'm in worship, that's one of the areas where we have a tendency to recognize whether or not there's chaos inside or not. Because when I'm just singing and focusing outward, that's easy. But if I close my eyes and I'm worshiping and I'm pulling back into the place of intimacy, and I'm pulling back into my own garden internally, and I'm waiting for God there, that's where you're going to know pretty darn quickly if there's a lot of chaos and stuff inside of here or whether it's a garden. I can tell you for me, and this is just kind of me being honest and vulnerable, like for me, when I internalize and I go to that place, it feels really good. It's really clean. It's beautiful, but it's not often filled with me. I need to go there more. Does that make sense? And there's been days when I go there and it's like, this is a mess and I don't want to touch it. But I just want to encourage us to make that a priority. To not let the silence be awkward. To not let it be a place of roaming wild animals and the enemy's input. But actually let God fill you so that you can fill the spaces around you. Other people, the way that we want to grow as a body, the way that we believe God has called us to impact this city, it won't happen if we aren't filled with Him first. So Jesus, we just thank You that You have been and are continuing to invite us into the wilderness with You. And God, I ask for each and every one of us that You would reveal what we've been replacing the restoration You want to give us with, where we've been using other things, God, to fill, to distract. God, I ask that where we have things filling that space that aren't from You, that You would help us to clear it out, that You would help us to attack those things with the same ferocity that Jesus did chasing people out of the temple, that we would not tolerate, God, anything in that space of intimacy that would hinder us from meeting with You and having full communion with You. God, I pray that we would all of us, let the excuses die and make You the priority, to take time with You, to be with You in that space. And Jesus, we thank You that You're not sitting in anger or frustration over us, but that You are wooing us. That You're not sitting there tapping Your foot in patient waiting, but that You're there with open arms, longing to be with us. So God, we just lift our hearts to You. Clear them out. Help us to meet with You. Amen.